This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Tess McLund.
Figure out what engages you, what lights you up. Because when you love what you do, happiness and even financial success can flow from that.
The need to serve others has never been greater in our nation. Money and position will or will not follow, but satisfaction will always be there. Always have a purpose in life that is beyond position and money.
Make career decisions the same way you fill out your tournament brackets. Follow your heart and go with your gut. Do what you love, find a ways to get paid for it, and if you ever have the luxury of multiple job offers, don't make the decision based on salary alone.
All right, so journalist Bob Woodruff, former Joint Chiefs Chairman Colin Powell, and New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg all say to pick a job you love. But it's easier said than done, isn't it? Especially when there are many more unemployed Americans than there are jobs. Well, Peter Capelli has another reason to pile on the misery. He teaches management at the Wharton School and says the fundamentals of hiring are broken, mostly because of the heavy reliance on technology to screen candidates. His new book is Why Good People Can't Get Jobs. Professor Capelli, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You write in the book that the modern hiring process itself has some inherent problems, especially employers who are pretty much using the internet to pick their candidates. But I thought the internet was supposed to make everything easier.
I think what the internet ends up giving us is scale. So you can contact lots more people, and lots more people can contact you. I suppose the question to ask yourself is that a good thing? Mm. And it turns out in hiring, it can be quite a bad thing. And the reason it's a bad thing is because you are interested in fit.
Do you have any statistics on the number of jobs that go unfilled every month because employers simply can't find this right fit?
Well, now that's it's a very good question as to what that actually means. I think when you get these arguments about jobs that we can't fill because we can't find anybody, that's really the self-diagnosis of the cause of the problem. Hmm. Because remember, everything is roughly within the control of the employer, right? They define the job, they set the requirements, they set the screening practices, they set the rate of pay, they determine how they market the job, how they recruit, and then they make the decision as to which recruits to take. So when they say, I can't find anybody, it could be because of all kinds of reasons. Right now, for example, we know that when we come out of recessions, it typically takes employers longer to find people. That is, vacancies stay open longer.
Why?
You know, if there's only one person out there and you got a job, you really need it done, you don't bother spending a lot of time pondering. You just grab the person and off you go.
Right.
But if you've got thousands of applicants and you think there's a pretty good chance that there's, as they say, the purple squirrel out there, you know, the completely unusual person who is just perfect for the job, you take more time and search.
The purple squirrel?
Yeah, I understand this is a long-standing term in the world of information technology. And it basically refers to that candidate that's just so rare that you rarely ever see them.
You know, I think it makes sense, this idea that hiring software just can't do this for you. I mean, not only can it probably not tell a good egg from a bad, but it can't give you gradations of candidates.
And I think even more than that, the way software has to work typically is as a series of yes-no, yes-no, yes-no gates. Mm-hmm. Well, once you start building a series of these gates in, let's say the odds are 50% that a typical candidate would be able to clear the first gate and then 50% clear the second gate. Clearing both gates is a 1 in 4 opportunity then. And once you get 10 gates like that, it's a 1 in 1,000 chance. And once you get more than that, you're up to the purple squirrel situation.
You write that a lot of folks get overlooked for some really trivial stuff. You know, they have a slightly different title than the job they're applying for. Maybe that they even use the wrong font on the resume. How do you know from employer to employer what you're supposed to look like on the page?
I think the advice, which is not going to surprise you, is to get around the software if you can, and that is try to get to a real person.
Right.
It's, you know, employers will say, we have to go through the software, and that's true. Often you do, but that doesn't mean you can't start by talking to a real person, somebody close to the hiring manager, and be able to persuade them that even if you don't have on paper the perfect characteristics, you're maybe even ideal once you can describe what you can do.
Yeah, tell us the story of Fernando Boero. He was the mechanical engineer. He had a master's degree, a professional license, 30 years experience, but he couldn't type 65 words a minute.
Right, right. So this particular story was of an engineering job with some requirements that were kind of crazy, and one of them was this typing speed requirement.
For an engineering job.
For an engineering job.
Right.
I heard one from somebody this week who told me that in this particular company where they basically packed vegetables, they were looking for a marketing executive, and they required that the marketing executive have experience with green olives. as opposed to black olives. There's a lot of those things. And I think a lot of people want to bash the HR community for this problem, but I don't think they're responsible. I think actually they were the solution to a lot of these problems, but they're gone now.
Yeah.
So companies downsized, got rid of people, tried to substitute software for them. In the old days, the HR recruiting manager would talk to the line manager who says, you know, we need an engineer to type 65 words a minute. And they'd say, come on, do you really need that? Does this job really require a master's degree? And there'd be some pushback. And now those people are gone.
Peter Capelli is a professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. And his new book is Why Good People Can't Get Jobs, something a lot of people are wondering these days. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.